The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include $15 an hour minimum wage is Biden's first big test with progressives, and Durham may give formerly incarcerated residents $500 per month in guaranteed income. And we'll begin with $15 an hour minimum wage is Biden's first big test with progressives. The battle over increasing the minimum wage is pitting President Joe Biden's plea for bipartisanship against his relationship with progressives in his party. Progressives who have tried for years to get a federal wage increase view the $15 an hour proposal in Biden's $1.9 trillion economic relief package as their best chance for that victory. But the Biden administration and his congressional allies are signaling that the higher wage is a bargaining chip that could be compromised or even abandoned in order to get Republicans' votes for a relief package. Progressives are warning Biden that it would be a political miscalculation to back down from increasing the minimum wage now. It would not be a good way for Joe Biden to start off his relationship with the progressive movement by giving up on a core priority that we have been driving and that we've moved the Democratic Party on. Our revolution executive director Joseph G. Varghese told McClatchy, Republicans and some centrist Democrats want to yank the wage increase from the stimulus proposal that is under negotiation. They say they are willing to consider a higher federal wage, but they do not believe that it belongs in the emergency relief package. Activists fighting for an increase in the minimum wage see a narrow window for Biden to push one through at the beginning of his term, when there is still the political willpower and appetite to tackle big issues, and Democrats have control over both chambers of Congress. We've been deferring and deterring promises to working people for decades now, and I don't think we should have any confidence that the next promise, that it will happen later, is going to mean anytime soon. Later has meant decades at this point for a living wage, said Joe Sandberg, a California-based activist and investor. Democrats are broadly supportive of a minimum wage increase, though they have different views on whether the mechanism for raising it should be the stimulus bill. A minimum wage increase would not directly affect most union members or their contracts, but labor groups also are advocating for the pay raise, saying it would raise the floor for all workers. Biden received strong support from labor and liberals in the 2020 election. Network exit polls showed that he won 56% of the vote in union households and 89% of liberals. His proposed American Rescue Plan gradually raises the minimum wage now, $7.25 an hour, to $15 an hour by 2025. There should be a national minimum wage of $15 an hour. No one working 40 hours a week should live below the poverty line, Biden said when he announced the package. If you work for less than $15 an hour and work 40 hours a week, you're living in poverty. But the White House could not comment this week to its inclusion in a brokered recovery package, saying it was a matter that would be decided by Congress. Jared Bernstein, a member of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, told reporters that Biden believes a wage increase is essential for undercompensated workers, but he declined to say whether it would be part of the final package. Next, Durham may give formerly incarcerated residents $500 per month in guaranteed income. At least 55 formerly incarcerated Durham residents could get $500 a month for a year as part of a guaranteed income pilot program, City Council member Mark Anthony Middleton said Thursday. Last month, Mayor Steve Shewell announced that Durham will likely get a share of a $15 million grant that Twitter's chief executive officer, Jack Dorsey, had contributed to Mayors for Guaranteed Income, a group advocating for such programs across the country. The city passed a resolution Thursday to pledge its support for a program at the local and national levels. Before reading the resolution, Middleton addressed those who have criticized him for the proposal. I just want to say to the folks that have called us socialist in our inboxes, to folks that have expressed legitimate concerns about disincentivizing work, to those that have, you know, called us civil rights pimps, he said, that's a quote, to those that have suggested that we would be basically subsidizing pathology, he continued, I want to say very clearly, one, that this is not city money. Middleton stressed that the program would be funded privately, although he has been prepared to ask for city money in the past. This is not about giving people houses or elaborate lifestyles or millions of dollars, he said. This is about us saying as a nation and as a city that there is a line beneath which we will not allow you to fall by virtue of your humanity. The resolution does not specify who could receive the income in Durham. Middleton said Durham's program could include formerly incarcerated residents during an interview with the News and Observer. The city expects to apply for the $500,000 grant next week, he said. If the city receives the money, the pilot program could launch in late May. The program could span 12 to 18 months, during which the residents re-acclimating to life after incarceration could receive direct payments of $500 to $1,000 a month, Middleton told the NNO. In January, Shewell put Middleton and council member Pierce Freeline in charge of submitting an application and creating a plan for administering the program. Middleton met with scholars from the University of Pennsylvania Center for Guaranteed Income Research and representatives of the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People, Spirit House, and other groups. And he decided then to narrow the pool to formerly incarcerated residents, partly to collect data on how a guaranteed income could affect the population. Brothers and sisters who are returning from incarceration, oftentimes they check a lot of boxes. They face dual challenges of employment, housing, stigma, Middleton said. A guaranteed monthly income could also help reduce recidivism, he said. Whatever your situation is, you now have an income, a source of money that could alleviate anxiety, changes your calculus about life choices you can make, Middleton said. it's less tempting to come up with creative ways to make money. Stockton, California ran a guaranteed income program called the Stockton Economic Empowerment Demonstration in 2019. The program gave 125 residents $500 for a year and a half, the NNO reported. 8 months into it, the Stockton residents spent 40% of the money on food, 25% on other merchandise, and just under 12% on utility payments, according to the program's researchers. Middleton is also reaching out to philanthropists and private donors to add more residents to the program, such as people at risk of eviction, and to extend the scope beyond a year. He had originally pitched an idea about guaranteed income in Durham in August, the NNO had reported. When I first announced this, I didn't intend for this to be kind of a one-off thing. I wanted it to be codified and institutionalized, he said, and also looked to adding more demographics and groups. I mean, universal means at some point everyone would be qualified for it. The details are being worked out, but city staff or a local organization could administer the payments and oversee the program, Middleton said. People would be picked by random selection using a database of residents transitioning out of prison and a vetting process afterward, he said. They would have to be willing to participate and currently unemployed. They also could not already be receiving public benefits that an additional $500 monthly income would disqualify them from getting. When asked whether the vetting process would consider the crimes a person committed, Middleton said, "We haven't determined that yet. The presumption is that whatever society and our judicial system said was the cost you had to pay, you've paid it," he said. The resolution in the Durham City Council unanimously passed states nearly 40% of Americans could not afford a single $400 emergency, and rising income inequality is compounded by an ever-growing racial wealth divide. The ongoing direct cash payments will put real money in the pockets of people across the country and have the dual effect of stabilizing families and stimulating local economies, the resolution states. There are cities all over the country and all over the world who have done these pilots, Mayor Pro Tem Jillian Johnson said before voting for the resolution. People use these funds to pay off their debts, to get better education, to provide opportunities for their children. Next, what can you actually buy with Bitcoin? In the last 12 months, the value of a single unit of Bitcoin has risen from less than $10,000 to more than $30,000. Companies including Square and IBM are using blockchain, the technology behind the currency, to design and improve digital payments methods. But what can you actually buy with Bitcoin? As it turns out, an awful lot. What it won't always be is easy. Bitcoin is just not the most efficient currency yet, said Henry Elder, head of wealth management at Wave Financial, a digital assets firm in Los Angeles. For example, one can purchase goods from Amazon with Bitcoin using a third-party service called Purse. The way Purse is supposed to work is this. A customer selects the items he or she wants to buy on Amazon, then copies the URLs and returns to Purse, which processes the transaction using gift cards it's acquired from people who want cryptocurrency. These guarantees are PERS guarantees its customers a minimum discount of 5% off Amazon's list prices and adds the option of negotiating to receive up to 15% off. I tried getting a $42.99 pack of 20 black KN95 masks with money I put in a Bitcoin wallet. But when it came time to click order, the total price with fees was $47.47, and that was including the 8% discount I proposed paying. Since I'd received a pop-up message from a PERS customer service rep named Eduardo from Buenos Aires, Argentina, offering technical assistance, I reached out and got back an automated message saying that Eduardo was away and that the typical response time for queries is a couple of hours. The whole thing felt a lot like ordering from Uber Eats, except that there wasn't even a bag of cold food at the end. It definitely wasn't like buying directly through Amazon with one click. In 2014, Overstock became one of the first big e-sellers to accept direct Bitcoin payments. It subsequently went on to develop a number of businesses related to blockchain. In an interview last week, the company's chief executive, Jonathan Johnson, made plain that there isn't an obvious overlap between the selling of closeout sofas and the rethinking of the world's major currencies. Bitcoin isn't a very big source of Overstock's revenue. During the first three quarters of 2020, the site had revenue of almost $2 billion, according to its earnings reports. An average of $30,000 to $50,000 a week came from cryptocurrency, Johnson said. Our demographic skews hard toward women, and Bitcoin purchasers tend to be men, he said. It's a different customer segment. Mostly, it would seem, Bitcoin became a payment option because its ethos lined up with the libertarian leanings of both Johnson and Patrick Byrne, Overstock's founder. But the wild oscillations in the value of Bitcoin have occasionally created complications for Overstock, specifically when it comes to returns. Although Johnson said the company was always clear at checkout that the refund would match the dollar price of the item rather than the quantity of Bitcoin spent, people still complain, sometimes out of confusion, sometimes not. We weren't going to let people use their bed sheets as a hedge against a price decline in Bitcoin, he said. People would say, I bought my patio furniture for 0.1 bitcoins, and now you're only refunding me 0.08 bitcoin. And we were like, yep. One industry that's been something of a pioneer in Bitcoin adoption is pornography. Same with sex work. MindGeek, the industry's largest conglomerate, accepts cryptocurrency on its sites. So does Charterbate. There are certain overlaps between porn and cryptocurrency. Men often hide their porn consumption. Bitcoin was designed with the idea that it could be used anonymously. No one's name is attached directly to the Bitcoin he or she owns. Instead, a holder of it is provided with a private key that allows for the creation of a password that is known only to him or her. Records are maintained through a publicly available digital ledger known as a blockchain managed by a volunteer army over numerous servers. It readjusts in real time as transactions take place between different holders of Bitcoin. That volunteer army will not mediate disputes over goods, so you can't reverse the transactions on crypto like you can with Visa and MasterCard, said Lily Sparks, an entrepreneur in Austin, Texas, who in 2020 founded Afterglow, a site meant to marry porn and sexual wellness. And a hallmark of pornography consumption, Sparks noted, is the attempt of its aficionados to avoid paying for it. Perhaps predictably, the lack of Bitcoin leadership has given it and other forms of crypto a certain desirability for those buying and selling contraband. On Discord, the message app, I connected to a user who goes by the handle Perk, who described in a phone interview a history of dealing drugs he purchased through Silk Road, a dark web marketplace that was shut down by the FBI in 2013. After paying suppliers through his Bitcoin wallet, Perk said that goods would be stashed inside things like stuffed animals and shipped to a post office box he set up. But the increasing demand for Bitcoin among stock market investors has done much to diminish these associations, he and others said. Many retail investors buy Bitcoin now through companies like Coinbase and BitPay, which operate as exchanges processing trades between buyers and sellers. And such, the codes that were once anonymous are becoming anything but. More and more retailers are setting up payment systems that enable Bitcoin transactions. Among the biggest are Microsoft, AT&T, and Home Depot. Additionally, apps in the Apple and Android stores make it possible for crypto connoisseurs to pay for airline tickets by converting Bitcoin to fiat money in real time. On Monday, a news release went out about a doctor in New York named Alexander Goldberg, who would now accept Bitcoin as payment, and for the $400 to $500 fees he charges to patients who want to be tested for coronavirus at home. His son, Mark Goldberg, said in an interview that it seemed like a good idea given that Bitcoin is all over the news. Its competitors are also proliferating. The Pepsi to Bitcoin's Coca-Cola is Ethereum. Many mainstream retailers that are getting into cryptocurrencies provide customers with the option of using either. Craigslist has the option for cryptocurrency transactions between individual sellers. Johnson, Overstock's chief executive, said that now when he goes to church, he feels questions from 75-year-old grandmothers wanting to know about Bitcoin. In June, MasterCard announced it was introducing a crypto-based debit card in partnership with BitPay that could be used at more than 3,000 merchants worldwide. In October, PayPal said that it would give customers in the United States the ability to buy, sell, or hold cryptocurrencies over its platforms. Later this year, those customers will also be able to shop with it. In an interview, Dan Schulman, president and chief executive of PayPal, said he sees this as an opportunity to give crypto incremental functionality and provide freedom to its adherents, including those who cannot get credit. But Schulman is unsure he would use his own Bitcoin, and he has a pile of it to go shopping. Perhaps that is because many who have spent Bitcoin live to regret it. The former drug dealer from Discord recalled using two Bitcoins in 2013 to buy himself a skateboard. Back then, it was worth doing. It was worth nothing, he said, like $100 a coin. Now they're worth more than $30,000 each. Similarly, in 2014, Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss converted thousands of bitcoins into cash to fund a $500,000 outer space jaunt by way of Virgin Galactic. They have many, many less millions as a result. Thankfully for the brothers Winklevoss, that was but a small fraction of their overall Bitcoin holdings, and more crypto-connected money may be on the way to them and their firm, Winklevoss Capital. Later this year, Gemini, a Winklevoss firm, plans to introduce a rewards credit card whose rewards come not in the form of cash back but in Bitcoin. In an interview, Tyler Winklevoss said he has definitely learned from his intergalactic misadventure. Spend cash, invest in Bitcoin. Cash is trash. Next, stocks push to more gains and record highs on Wall Street. U.S. stocks notched more gains and pushed to new highs on Monday, extending a winning streak that just gave the market its best weekly gain since November. The S&P 500 rose 0.7%, its sixth straight gain. The three major indexes climbed to an all-time high, as did a benchmark of smaller company stocks. Technology and financial stocks helped lead the broad rally. Energy sector companies surged the most, following a 2% jump in the price of U.S. crude oil. Treasury yields mostly rose. Investors have been encouraged by surprisingly good corporate earnings reports. News that a recent surge in the new coronavirus cases is easing, and progress in the distribution of vaccines. The resilience of the corporate sector has been resounding, said Ross Mayfield, investment strategy analyst at Baird. The path of least resistance is still higher. The S&P 500 rose 28.76 points to 3,915.59. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 237.52 points, or 0.8%, to 31,385.76. The NASDAQ Composite climbed 131.35 points, or 1%, to 13,987.64. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.